says. What does it say you'll get? You get your praise from God. That the hidden things of darkness here are not the things that you've done wrong. It's the things that you've done right that you've never let anybody else know about. It's going to reveal your motives for why you did it. Everyone else misunderstands your motives, but God's going to let someone one day know your true motives, and then you're going to get praise from God. That's what it says here. This isn't a time to dread. This is a time to look forward. God's not going to bring up or drudge up all your old sins. If you've confessed them on a day, they're under the blood, and they're in the sea of forgetfulness forever. Man, we as Christians have no fear on the day of judgment, because Christ was judged for us. And we don't get to heaven on our merit, we get to heaven on His merit. And so when this comes, when God starts revealing the hidden things of darkness and the motives of men's heart, it's a time of rejoicing. And every man will start saying, and we'll be looking back and saying, I didn't know he's the one that did that. Or I didn't know why he did that. Now I see. And we're going to see people in heaven that we've looked at all along, man, and they're the ones that are saying, well, they don't have much to offer, and they're the ones who are going to be honored as greatest in the kingdom of God. The water carriers. Let's look over in Acts 9. Acts 9. Acts 9 and verse 25. And then the disciples took him by night and led him down by a wall in a basket. I call these guys the rope holders. Now, we don't know anything about these two guys that led him down by a basket. But man, wouldn't you like to know their names so that we can honor them? Because they did a tremendous work for God. You can almost say that they held the purposes of God for the Gentile nation in their hands while they were letting them down. That was a very unique task. They were rope holders. No one ever knew who they were. I believe we'll know who they are in heaven. I believe that they're going to be one of the ones that are honored up there. And here they come, the rope holders. God bless them. And I'm sitting over, yeah, but God, I had a church. Yeah, but they held the rope. Well, okay. But they're helpers. We need to be helpers. And the last one. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 1. Second Corinthians, the first chapter. Verse 10. Who delivered us from so great a death, and doth deliver, in whom we trust that he will yet deliver us. Verse 11. You also helping together by prayer for us. You also helping together by prayer for us. Another way that we can help, probably the best way that we can help, is to pray for one another. I believe that if there would be an indictment against the Church of Jesus Christ, that indictment would have to be against their prayerlessness. Now, I want you to know that prayerlessness is a sin. It's a sin. It's just not a lack of discipline. It's a sin. When you don't pray, you sin against God. And I don't have all the time to go into reasons why, but very generally, one of the things it does, it'll rob God of time with you. It'll rob you of time with God. It'll rob others of what you could do on their behalf in prayer, and it'll rob the lost. And that God doesn't have a vehicle and where he can equip you to go out to the lost. Let's turn to 1 Samuel. Well, just you don't have to turn there. Just let me turn there. 1 Samuel 12. 1 Samuel 12, verse 23. Listen to this. This is Samuel saying. He says, "For moreover, as for me, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. God forbid that I would sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you." Now he's talking about Saul here, praying for Saul. And Saul wasn't that worthy of prayer. Of course, you don't have to be worthy to have someone pray for you. But it says here that we sin against God when we cease to pray for one another. It's a sin. We need to help each other by praying for one another. I told you, Larry Lee fired me up as far as prayer is concerned. He fired me up a year and a half ago, and he continues to fire me up. And this is something that I've said last week and Wednesday night and Thursday night, and I'll say it again tonight. But we as a congregation can only go as far with God as we're willing to go in prayer. I want you to know we could get a good preaching ministry here, that we could have a good teaching ministry here, that we could put all kind of effort and have a good praise and worship ministry here. We could have a tremendous children's ministry, but if we don't have prayer, we're not going to have anything. We have prayer, we'll get everything. Praying helps people. How many of you have ever been in a difficult situation where it was really heavy and right in the midst of it, it broke? You were even too much anguish or too pressured to pray for yourself. You're just sitting there wishing, man, that you were being tempted, there was something going wrong, and all of a sudden in the midst of it, it broke. That's happened to me. You know why it happened to me? Because I believe somewhere somebody was praying for me, doing battle on my behalf, and it helped me. I can tell, honestly, I can tell when people aren't praying for me. And when they are. I know the difference. Prayer makes a difference. Say that with me. Prayer makes a difference. One more time. Prayer makes a difference. It does. I don't know if any of you read any biographies, but you ought to read some biographies about great men of God. I've been challenged to start reading because I want to know what made them great. And the one thing that's been common in all the ones that I've been reading is prayers made them great. We've heard about Charles Spurgeon, who every Sunday morning spoke to 5,000 to 6,000 people at Metropolitan Tabernacle. Tremendous. His sermon on Sunday morning had more circulation throughout the world than any piece of literature in the world at that time. People read his sermons more than they read the Daily Times or the newspaper. Powerful, powerful man that preached in his ministry. You can tell when someone's great because when they die, their life still lives on. And it still ministers. Paul's been dead for so long, and yet he still ministers. Keith Green died. I don't know if you know anything about Keith Green, but he's a tremendous man of God in our generation. And he died, and yet his ministry lives on. His songs still live on. What he started still lives on. His spirit that captured everybody else still lives on. You read in Charles Spurgeon and his biography, and he said, and a lot of people come up and say, well, what makes Metropolitan Tabernacle such a tremendous church? How did you grow so much? And he goes over, and he doesn't show him any sermons, but he takes him over to a room. And he opens up the room, and inside that room, there's probably about 60 to 80 people interceding on their face before the Lord. And that room is filled with people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He said, that's why Metropolitan Tabernacle Church is a great church. That's why I'm a great preacher. It's because of those people praying. We've heard of Charles Finney. Some people say that he was the greatest evangelist since Paul the Apostle. I mean, he'd go into cities and whole cities would get saved. You read his biography, he went in this one city, went up into a motel room, sat down, started praying. About a week later, everybody just started getting up out of their houses. They didn't know why, they were restless, and they started meeting downtown right in front of this motel. Everyone just started, we're out there walking, talking to one another. They didn't know. And all of a sudden, Charles Finney comes out on his balcony, preaches the gospel, and everybody gets saved. He was known to go into factories while people were working, sharing his faith, and he'd stay there all day. And at the end of the day, everybody in the factory came to know Jesus Christ. And you ask him, in his biography, you say, why are you so effective? And he said, well, I pray, but I also have somebody that is my prayer helper. And if you'll never notice this guy, you never hear much about him, unless you happen to see Charles Finney and this guy going to cities together. He always went with this guy, and this guy drove a little bus.